Welcome to the LRNteach.com podcast, helping you consider Christian education for the poor and marginalized from a theonomic perspective. LearnTeach.com advises you to cease from man and to think God's thoughts after him. Find us at LRNteach.com, on YouTube, and in the iTunes Store. Contact me at facebook.com/Christian.education. So, can a high school give you an education?
Well, it can give you some kind of an education. It can be poor or it can be better, but the thing as Christians is, what is the center of that education? What is the worldview? What is the core of it? And of course, as parents, you want your children to grow up like you. You want them to, of course, be better off and more accomplished, but you want them to have the same values that you have. And as soon as you put them into the hands of someone else, you're entrusting that person with a great responsibility. We're told by God to raise our children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. Put them into a school that has some other agenda or some other Lord in mind, and you've got a problem. It's incumbent on parents to make sure that the education their children have is one that they'll feel comfortable with when they stand before God on Judgment Day and give account for how they raise their children. And the Robinson curriculum wants to put as much of that responsibility back into the hands of the parents as possible. And of course, we are a Christian curriculum, so it begins with the Bible. That is the foundational book of the curriculum. And it ends with the Institutes of the Christian Religion by John Calvin. And we hope that in between there, they get a very good general education in the 3 R's and, of course, every subject you could name, and prepare them for life, but mostly prepare them how to learn and how to solve problems and how to think. And so we give them a 6,500-word vocabulary. We give them 2 hours a day of math and science. We give them an extensive reading list with a wide variety of a selection of the best books in the English language. And through it all, we hope that, you know, we're going to accomplish that task. Of course, we do it for just $195 for all your children for all 12 years, including everything except the math books.
That's quite something. And I just want to underline the point that if you do send your child to any given state high school, that yes, the teacher will have some responsibility for how your child turns out, but the ultimate responsibility is with you as a parent. Just because you've shipped them away to a Christian school, which is great, or a state school, which is definitely not great, then either way, you have the responsibility. You just can't get around it, so you got to deal with it. Now, it's not always a great business plan to sell responsibility. A wise man once told me, but you've been working there for quite some time. Obviously, some people are buying it, as it were. So you've been extensively involved with the Robinson curriculum. Could you give us a little potted history of your involvement? So what attracted you to the Robinson curriculum as against its competitors, and what lessons you have learned about educating as someone involved in the production side of the Christian curriculum?
Right. Well, the last thing I ever thought I would be doing was being involved in education of any kind. The thought just did not appeal to me at all. But here I was, kind of a computer geek before that was cool, way back in the day. My dad took me to a film at the Ontario Science Center, and it was all about how computers doubled in power for the same price every 18 months, Moore's Law. And I thought, well, that's a thought worth capturing for Christ. And so I got into computers, and then I thought, what worthwhile thing can I do with this skill? And so I volunteered myself to Gary North and to Dr. Robinson. And Dr. Robinson took me up on it, and his wife tragically had just died of a rare pancreatic disorder, and she was the computer geek in that relationship. And so I came along just in time to meet some of that need, and we ended up doing a couple of projects. I was writing for a newsletter, access to energy. And it became clear that while the liberals could very quickly and easily put out a lie through the major media, it took the conservatives a great deal of effort and time to try and straighten people out and propagate the truth to undo the damage of that lie. The job would become a lot easier if people could think, if they could read a graph. I mean, dumb people are easy to confuse and lie to. What can you say? And so he thought it would be important to upgrade the level of education available to people. And of course, homeschooling was just becoming mainstream or more mainstream at that point. Dr. Rushdoony had revived a very old tradition of schooling at home with his books, The Intellectual Schizophrenia and the Messianic Character of American Education. And so I was on board. I said, well, I never thought it'd be an education, but here's the scanner we need. Here's the software to do it all. And we built the website. And it was quite a thrill to get the first order over the invisible internet. It's just out there, you know, but it worked. And after 3 years, it grew to the point where I could say goodbye to my job at EDS and start marketing and supporting the Robinson curriculum full time. And we've been doing it ever since.
That's pretty exciting. It's lovely to hear people's stories about how God planted interests in them and gave them the vision, and in your case, put you there, set you in front of the open door, as it were. That's at a key time, and mid-90s, early mid-90s, a period where in the near future the internet would happen, really. Back in the day of Netscape, was just about coming on the scene. Deck machines were still around, and maybe the first 386s, yeah.
Yeah, the everything was new and everything was possible. And my first thought was, well, we have to see God's kingdom. I remember was sitting in an office in EDS, and the boss came in and said, okay, we've got this new thing, the internet. We're looking for ideas. Anybody know what we should do, you know, as a company? Is there something we can do that would be profitable here? And nobody raised their hand. I was busy gathering skills that I could use for Dr. Robinson and our projects there. He was a man of great character. He co-authored a book with Gary North, 10 Feet to Survival, you know, The Fighting Chance, a civil defense book. And so that was my bent. Everything was centered around how can I serve this man who I thought was a man of great character, great godly character. And so that's what we did.
So something you said there really struck me, and I want to underline that again, that homeschooling is not this weird American invention that weird Americans do. And it certainly is perceived in that way by Europeans and by British, although it's becoming ever more popular, certainly in the UK. It is the way it was done. And Rushdoony pointed out that often we look at facts and call them facts of nature, whereas they are in fact facts of humanism. And we take state schooling as normative, whereas it is a wholly an aberration. It is the initial training of the child at home and the continued training of the child at home which is the norm. We think of even of Rousseau, the father of modern education in so many ways. He was educated at home to a very high degree by his father, a man of strict reformed Calvinistic upbringing. So again, we're not dealing with anything new here, really.
Well, Rousseau was the one of the worst humanists you can possibly imagine. 160 odd years ago. But the modern public school that is so common to us all began in Prussia, because in Prussia, they were a kind of a small country, and Europe was into wars all the time at the time. And so they organized their whole society to be a kind of a Spartan military, very systematized society, all for the purpose of gaining advantage in warfare, even though they were smaller. And so everything had to be done very systematically, very military-like. Everything had to be oriented around the survival of the state. And now that model has been adopted around the world as normative. The results are disastrous. They still have some of that in Germany and in Prussia. They're very, very hostile to homeschooling, surprisingly so. Despite any arguments, the centralized role of the state is everything. And it's almost like an anthill or beehive type mentality.
It was a little bit of a shock to you that you ended up there and you were attracted by this man of great integrity and great vision. Now, you as an outsider, as it were, to education, you must have learnt a significant amount dealing with thousands, tens of thousands of customers in however. I'm sure you've built up a picture of what people's impressions and needs and what works and what doesn't work in education as a producer, as somebody that has an impact on the production side. Can you share perhaps some of those lessons?
Well, it's, a child is not a blank slate. Their brains are almost completely and fully developed the moment they come out of the womb. And so after that, they learn by example, first and foremost. And a mother right away instinctively teaches that child the language that is going to be central to its life. And then she loses all confidence that she can teach anything else and wants to send them off. In many cases, but in fact, she is a great teacher. A child is ready, willing, and able to learn and excited. They come out of the womb learning sponges, ready just to soak everything up and to become like their parents. What we do in the curriculum with our curriculum is empower the parents to have that child learn to teach themselves. We have the goal, like I said before, of teaching them to think. And of course, that means giving them, the ability to work math problems, to solve problems in general. If you learn how to solve math problems, you can take that problem-solving ability and transfer it to other areas of your life. And so teaching them problem-solving skills is job one. It's the most difficult thing they do every day, first thing in the morning, is solve a tough set of problems. And when they grow up, there's no problem they can come across that they don't feel comfortable tackling and solving that problem, whether it's math or just anything in life. We don't know exactly how people learn how to solve problems, but we do know that if we let them take ownership of the process and don't spoon feed them everything, they can learn to solve problems on their own. And that's an incredibly valuable skill for a child to have. And we want to inculcate that problem-solving skill as much as possible. And so one of the big differences between our curriculum and a public school is that in the public schools now, you'll have parents say, well, my child got a problem right, but he still got marked as wrong because the teacher didn't like the way he did it. He didn't do it in the way prescribed. And we do the opposite. We say, well, between any problem and its answer, there are thousands of possible solutions. And we want a child to find the way of solving a problem that is native to their thinking, that they've discovered on their own. And we don't want to dictate how you get from A to B, just that, you get the right answer. That's the important thing. So it's diametrically opposed, the way we approach this, to the way the public school does things. They don't care if the answer is right or wrong as long as you do it the way they said, which it just it's insane. But that's what's de rigueur in the public schools.
One of the things that becomes apparent as you read literature, as you read critiques of the Prussian model of education, is that the purpose of quote unquote education in that context is very firmly conformity, and it is obedience training in so many ways. So, but you in the Robinson curriculum, you have a package, one package arrives, and it's everything you will ever need. So you have the stuff, the Robinson stuff. You have one parent or two parents,
Or a grandparent.
or a grand, yes, indeed, a grandparent. And you have one child, two children, three children, four children, five children, however many. You have eating your own dog food, as you put it, you have gone through the Robinson curriculum and it has gone through you and through your children. So how do you start? I mean, the high school has this advantage of these highly educated PhD people designing their curriculum, of psychologists designing computer programs and textbooks, these well-endowed textbook companies breaking things down into chunks. You have universities that are dedicated to the art of teaching. You have all this infrastructure behind it, but you are naked and open, as it were, with several pieces of glorified pieces of paper and the educator and the educated. How do you start? What does it
And
look
they're
like?
certified. Don't forget, they're certified. We're not
They
certified.
don't have any just any piece of paper. They have the piece of paper which has been somehow anointed or whatever. They are the appointed ones. But how do you start? Tell us what it's like.
Well, they turn out garbage, and you think, how can this be? They spend $10,000 to $20,000 a year per child of tax money goes into this system. They've got infrastructure out the wazoo. They will tear down in the right neighborhoods. They will tear down perfectly good schools and put up brand new ones so that now they have an Olympic-sized pool instead of that, slightly smaller pool that they had before and this kind of thing. And of course, sports is central to keep the parents happy. But yeah, you would think we couldn't stand a chance, but here we are for $200 one time. It works out to like 50 cents a year. If you have enough children, it's really incredibly inexpensive. And the books you can print out with modern technology for a penny a page, $3 for a 300-page book. It's we do leverage the technology quite a bit. So, but it's still all ridiculously inexpensive. I like to say we're less than lunch money for one child for one semester. And yet they are turning out students that can't read their own diplomas. And the United States just drops down, this list of the top nations in education. We're way near the bottom. Except for some poor African third world nations, we among the industrialized nations, we are pretty sure dead last. And yet, in our curriculum, the students we graduate, at least anecdotally, are doing fantastically well. The students are getting their PhDs. Dr. Robinson's six children, five out of six of them have their PhDs, and the last one is working on it. We hear of students taking standardized tests to enter the Marine Corps, for instance, and they'll score in the top one percentile. And so the results are just dramatic. I've wondered how can this be? I mean, we do have a good program. But why the huge disparity in results? And I think it's because when you have all this infrastructure and you got these college-trained teachers and the whole busing system and all these supposed advantages, what you're really building is imagine an invalid who has everything done for him and he's spoon-fed everything and he's wheeled around. Everything is on the outside. With the Robinson curriculum, everything is done on the inside. People continually want to involve electronics in their children's lives, and one of our rules is no electronics in the child's life till they're 16 or older. And we
If you came to Korea, you would be burnt at the stake. Let's think of this as a box, the education box for this for the state schools. They're big boxes. They produce high school diplomas, they produce different college diplomas, they produce masters, they produce PhDs, they've got these pieces of paper and so on. And it's a very expensive box, and it's a box which requires lots of people and lots of supporting institutions and a huge amount of money, other people's money, to fund it. And it produces something regularly. And unfortunately, it seems that the standard of what it produces, as measured by standard academic tests, is continually going down. This is a mystery. Whereas you have another box, let's call it the Robson curriculum box. It's a cheap box. It's a box you can get through your mail and probably download, I don't know, but it's a virtual box, let's say, and this box produces graduates, if you want to say, without pieces of paper from the government, but people of real quality, real academic quality, real ability to solve real world problems. Now, it makes me think of a Christian critique of homeopathy once, which concluded that since we don't understand how it works, it must be of the devil. So is there some strange magic involved in here? Or
There is. I mean, if you look at these schools, they're all captured by curriculum companies, and the administrators or whoever the decision makers are, they go on junkets in the middle of winter to Hawaii to peruse the latest offerings from the curriculum companies. And so they just got this continual churning of curricula once it passes through these approval processes and so on. At like my neighbor across the road teaches math to college students, and the books are $130 a pop, and you can't use the book from last year because that edition is old hat and unusable and degraded, and you must have the new edition, of course. Meanwhile, we're using books that are 100 years old plus. We use books that are a selection of the best books in the English language that our civilization has been able to produce. And so they don't stand a chance. They're not going to produce anything near the quality that we can offer. Like I said at the beginning, children learn by example. And the best way you can educate the mind of a human being is have their mind interact with the mind of a great author, of someone who has been proven over time as to have written a great classic. And so imagine your child sitting down at the feet of Shakespeare, of Mark Twain, you know, of God himself through the prophets in the Bible. I mean, here this child's mind is interacting virtually through the medium of a book with the greatest minds ever. And what have they got? Well, they've hired some people to write curriculum material that they can then copyright, and they control this curriculum process. Your child picks up these books and they're bored to tears. It's so awful. It's dry as dust. And their mind naturally rebels against it. And so they've turned to edutainment. You know, they put TVs in the rooms and they get the children to sit passively in front of the flashing screen. And, you know, we have the theory that when you learn, all the action is happening behind your eyeballs. And so the less happening in front with this boring black and white text, you know, that's what we want. We want all the color, the action, the drama, the imagination. Everything is happening behind your eyeballs. It's very easy to see why they lose with the math, like we explained there. They're learning problem-solving skills with a 6,500-word vocabulary system. Their minds are given the tools to think cogently with, to express themselves. They're writing every day, a page of writing, and so practice makes perfect. All my kids write better than I do and more easily. They've just done it every day of their lives. And of course, when they do go to higher education, they're perfectly well suited to take an assignment, to take a book, whatever, and absorb the knowledge out of that book and to write a report and to then take, you know, the math that they've learned and apply that to the real world in physics and chemistry and thermodynamics and statistics, which are also included in our curriculum. If the kids that go through our curriculum, if they go all the way through the materials, are quite easily able to test out of their first 1 or 2 years of college and get their degrees very quickly, no matter which college they go to. And of course, we can talk about higher education. That's a whole other subject. I don't know how the competition can possibly stand against our $200 curriculum. They don't have a chance.
I love what you said about the action happening behind the eyeballs. But what I'm really curious to know is, I want you to take a slice of a day and sum it up in a few minutes. What happens? Do you open the door to your magic room, shove your children in, close the door and serve meals, and something happens? Is that it? Is it just the children in front of the books?
To an outsider, it might look like that. We always want an adult present and serving as an example of studious behavior to the children. But, you know, we really need to contrast this again with, you know, what's typically happening with 95% of Christian children, They get up in the morning and very early. They're rushed off to school on a bus. They then, are shuffled around this institution from room to room. Their minds are completely captivated by managing the social interaction.
So are you talking about prison?
Exactly. It's hard to tell the difference between the prisons and the schools and the airports, and the institutionalization of it all just takes over. The last thing you're able to do is concentrate on anything, and so all of the work that, all the learning that their child is expected to do is given to them in the form of homework. Go home and actually learn the subject. So the child comes home at the end of the day. He's burned out from all of the activity. He's he just wants to wind down or watch TV for the typical 5 to 7 hours, whatever it is. But here he's loaded down with his homework at the end of the day when he's all tired and worn out, and that's when he's expected to do his real learning. And if it doesn't happen, the teachers and the schools have a wonderful built-in excuse as to why Johnny is failing. It's because, well, he didn't do his homework. And so it's a symbiotic thing going on there. With the Robinson curriculum, the child gets up in the morning, he does his 30-second commute from his bedroom to the kitchen or whatever, and after his morning ablutions, he will then sit down and do the most difficult thing he has to face that day, which is solve a tough set of problems in the math. There are very few distractions. He's in a comfortable, protected environment. There's no one to bully him. There's no giant institution to navigate. He's just sitting there at home, and his whole focus is on solving that tough set of problems. And so he does that. He's got 2 hours to do that. And then he'll take a break and then sit down and do his writing. And then his vocabulary, a couple of words of vocabulary study, and then a couple of chapters of reading in whichever book he's in. Again, a selection of the best books in the English language. So these books are not dry as dust textbooks. They're books that excite the imagination. They're books that are very well written and very interesting to read. And of course, always appropriate to that level, whatever the child is in. And so the mom, her job each day, again, is to be an example of studious behavior first thing in the morning, hopefully before the baby requires full-time attention. And then she gets to do all the jobs that she has to do of preparing meals and, managing that household. And so the child internalizes the teaching. They sit down with the book. The book is their teacher. The author of the book is their teacher, and they learn how to feed themselves the education that they're expected to absorb, the learning they're expected to have. And, rather than being spoon-fed, they have to proactively take ownership of the material and feed themselves that education. Of course, that means they're always learning at their own pace. They're not going to stuff themselves too quickly. They're not going to starve themselves. They're going to go at their own pace. And they do that in each of the different subject areas. So if they're sick or something, they're going to go slower through the material. And if they're feeling great and they're engaging in one of our recommended techniques, the oral learning technique, they're going to go through the material very quickly and accomplish a lot. And so every child is given their head, go for it. And the children love it. Almost all of the children that get into this curriculum, once they figure out what's going on, they really do like feeding themselves. Who wants to be spoon-fed, unless you're starving and an invalid? Nobody wants to be spoon-fed. So I think having them take mental ownership of the material and then sit down in front of a selection of the best materials that they can possibly hope for in the math and in the vocabulary and in the reading, they can't help but get a very good education and well trained to later on in life continue to solve problems, continue to pick up a book and absorb the knowledge out of the book. And can you imagine when I was an EDS, if we had to learn a new database program or something, they would send us off to class for $5,000 a week. You would sit in this class and they would spoon feed you this material. A Robinson curriculum graduate can sit down with the book on the subject, which there always is one, absorb the knowledge out of that book and be way ahead of the competition. And with the way technology changes and so on, that's an incredible skill to have, very valuable.
Just as you talk, the word that springs to mind is liberation. Well, of course, liberation is, yes, it's liberation from, and maybe that is liberation from the institution which shares a large number of characteristics with prison or nasty places like airports. But much more than that, it's liberation too, and it's liberation to be able to converse with the greatest minds in name your discipline. It's the liberation to be able to access knowledge which is hidden in books. And for those that have perhaps, like myself, I feel rather neglected their education and then subsequently were compelled to actually learn something, one does feel one's limitations when one addresses more difficult material. So this is liberation from a lot of drudgery in the adult life. There is just so much going for this curriculum. Learnteach.com, it's about considering Christian education for the poor and marginalized. And I spent some small length of time, a couple of years in Africa, and many of the cliches are true. Africa's a big place, but pretty uniformly it is poor. And much of Africa, East Africa, is English speaking, and many in French speaking areas aspire to learning English as well. So we have here in the Robinson curriculum a Christian curriculum, a very methodologically sound curriculum, which does not require highly paid teachers or great edifices. It does not require certification, but it will give, regardless of your background, if you can stump up between a few people that money, then you buy it, you download it, and the internet is coming more and more throughout Africa. You have it, you've got it, you've got something that will work for you no matter what your background is. Here it is, it's on a plate. But let's move on. High school. If high schools are well endowed, then universities are superbly endowed, and they have the even better minds working at them, and you get to address these great minds. They're not hidden behind the textbooks. Is there anything that the Christian can come up with to compete with these imposing institutions, which sadly are bastions of humanism, and even the, and perhaps especially the Bible college and seminaries, you're lucky to come out of it with your faith. What can we do to address this?
Right. Well, again, the competition to anyone wanting to enter that field is incredible, because you just look at these colleges. A lot of them here in the States started out as seminaries. They would take students, once you knew your Greek and your Hebrew and you could prove yourself to be very well educated, then you got to enter university and study theology and become a pastor or whatever. And now you go to these same places a couple of hundred years later, Harvard and Yale and so on, and they are absolute bastions of every anti-God philosophy that you can possibly imagine. Now there are technical schools like MIT and of course the best one, the Institute of Science in California, Caltech. And they're, as long as they're sticking to the sciences, again, taking math and applying it to the real world, developing technology and techniques and so on, they're still untouchable. They're very much at the top of their game. But when we look at the normal four-year liberal arts college, which there's tons of them around here, even the tuitions there to get through 4 years, you're looking at going in debt. I don't know, I suppose at the very cheapest colleges with lots of financial aid, maybe only 50,000. Others with a bigger name, you're talking maybe $150,000 to $250,000 in debt to end up with this piece of paper at the end. There, where they're just the humanities, law, history, sociology, psychology, all these soft humanities, there we have a system where somehow parents, Christian parents, have been convinced to hand over their hard-earned money, their children's inheritance, just hand it over to these utterly godless humanists to, here, take my precious Christian child, even my homeschool child, that I've invested all my hopes and all my efforts into, and you take them and put them through 4 years of godless humanism and do your best to destroy their faith, to utterly wreck them and destroy them as far as God's kingdom is concerned. Make them hate everything their parents value, and we'll pay you very handsomely for the privilege as long as you give them a certified piece of paper at the end of it that shows that they could get a certified job at the certified state or a company that works for the state, and it'll all be worth it. And what a travesty. What an absolute travesty that is. You know, Dr. Robinson said, what am I going to do with this system? And so with his children, they went the advanced placement exam route, and his children would take advanced placement exams and try to test out of their first 1 or 2 years of this college system all the deadly 101 courses where they heavily propagandize you into a very foreign, godless worldview, and then just focus on the sciences, which are least corrupt. The closer you are to math, the harder it is to corrupt things, I suppose, applied math and so on. And that's what he did with his children. They all got chemistry and math degrees and then went on to their PhD studies. Now, with my children, I've got 6 children as well. The whole idea of trying to navigate that mess and fight those battles, and Dr. Robinson did have some battles he had to fight trying to keep his girls out of these classes where they teach that all sex is rape and this type of thing, rather than fight that whole battle. And then there's another battle if you want to send them to Christian schools and Bible schools. They're just very expensive and often not very orthodox. I'm a testament to that. I graduated from Calvin College in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And the last thing you're going to do is learn the Reformed faith there, much less Christian Reconstruction, you know, reconstructing all things in terms of Christ and his authority to rule. All authority in heaven and earth is given unto me. Make disciples of the nations. You're not going to learn that at any Christian college that I'm aware of. And so what am I going to do with my children? And out of necessity, we had to create a college, you know, that gave you enough headroom where you could get a 2-year or 4-year or even a 7-year education that would equip you to seek God's kingdom, to reconstruct everything in terms of Christ. And so that's the route we've gone. And the result today is pocketcollege.com.
And if you go there, you'll find lots of excellent audio by Rushus John Rushdoony. And you'll find his books there available to read online.
Right. We did the same thing as Dr. Robinson. Dr. Robinson, when his wife died, his youngest was 1 and a half. His oldest was 12. And he was left without his teacher. And so he had of necessity to come up with a way to educate these children that kept them out of the institution, that kept their family whole. And I had the same thing. I was looking for a way to keep my children out of the institution. Now, a couple of my girls have gone to community college for sewing and design and things like that, which is fine. I got a son who wants to become a nurse or nurse's aide. He's very good at dealing with people and wants to help them. But for all the humanity side of things, for the worldview things, for their values and so on, the last thing I wanted to do was take my precious children that God has entrusted me with and hand over my life savings to an institution to convert them into humanists. I cast about for what would God have me to do in this situation, and a friend introduced me to the Mount Olive Tape Library down in Mississippi, Texas.
I think we're all very much in debt to the work of that man.
Yeah, George Calhoun, a wonderful man in Mississippi who he felt called to gather all of these tapes from the different seminars and conferences that were going on in the Reform circles, where men were tackling this problem of understanding everything in terms of scripture, understanding everything in terms of the rulership of Christ. And he would gather all these tapes and put them in this library and loan them out 12 at a time for 6 weeks for $2.50, because of my upbringing and the vision my dad helped give me. I thought, how can I capture this for Christ? How can I convert these tapes to digital form and make them available to everybody? That was in 98, thanks to a friend, Glenn Moots. And then after 5 years, I found the right machine, and God enabled me to convert it to be a high-speed digitizer, and we started that project. I wanted to focus on the best material first, which, due to my association with Gary North, I understood to be Dr. Rush Jr., and so I did that. And then as I was digitizing them, I listened to them. And for 3.5 years, starting probably in 2004, once I had some of these things done and organized, for 3.5 years, every day in the middle of the night, I would hit the little button on my CD player, and it would play a track, and I would listen to a lecture by, or a lesson by, Dr. Rush Jenny. And after 6 months, I realized my brain was being transformed. I was 45 at the time, and yet my brain was being transformed. It was converting into something else, like a butterfly coming out of a chrysalis type of thing. It was converting from this caterpillar into something else. And then after 3.5 years, I was definitely a different person. And I was born and raised Reformed and got converted by reading C.S. Lewis, and read, due to him, everything by J.R.R. Tolkien, and realized the value of the Eucatastrophe, and that he was really communicating. And then from him, Charles Williams, and from him, you get this incredible doctrine of coinherence. And yet, to really solidify everything and to make it very explicit, I needed Dr. Rush Jenny. And of course, Dr. Rush Jenny is a phenomenal man, which I slowly discovered. Sharing him with the world has been one of the greatest privileges of my life. There it all is at Pocket College. Of course, it's been there in audio form since at least 2008, and now, due to some hard work by my family and people in my church, and a generous gift from a donor, all of those lectures have now been transcribed. Will soon be available, completely beautifully organized and beautifully displayed at pocketcollege.com, which you can now see in its beta form, pocketcollege.com/beta. And it really forms the basis of the most amazing education you can possibly give a child. I will still concede that if you go to the Colorado School of Mines, that you will still get a fantastic technical education, but you're not going to do better in law and history and sociology and psychology and theology. You're not going to do better anywhere on the planet in any school than you can at pocketcollege.com. And of course, we call it Pocket because everything runs on a smartphone these days, and where do you put that? You put it in your pocket, and that's the location of the best college in the world.
I was in Senegal, West Africa, 2006, 2007, and the nature of the work I was doing with Wycliffe Bible translators and computer support meant that I had a lot of time. And around that time, maybe it was in 2007, Calcedon Foundation made available a lot of that audio free of charge. I sucked it up, you know.
Yeah, we sent them all of the files and they published them. They weren't organized very, very well, but that was the result of that work. You would think, well, why have just this one guy on Pocket College? Well, he's not really just one guy. His calling in life was simply to read, and that's what he did. He read a serious book every day of his adult life, and he would peruse in another 4 to 6 books. And that was his calling. I mean, I can't read a serious book in a year, but he read a serious book every day. He would take notes on it, and then he would consolidate everything, and give a lesson on what he had learned or how the Bible applied to that. And so really, when you're listening to Rushduni, you're listening to a distilled form of every great Christian thinker through history, certainly starting with all of the prophets and the patriarchs. So really, when you listen to Rushduni, you're listening to thousands of different Christian authors. And then given the Christian point of view on all of the non-Christian authors, the secularist or those who are opposed to Christ, he's taken them all in hand and given them the Christian treatment, you know, scrubbing them down and finding out what's really going on and putting them in their place. Who are these people? Where are they really coming from? And what does this all mean? And so in Rushduni, you have what I call, among other things, you have a daily immunization to give these children who are coming out of these homeschools and then have to face the world, a world very hostile to Christ and his claims, very hostile to Scripture and God's law. And you're giving them an immunization against all the degradation and depredations of that godless culture out there. But it's even more powerful than that. These children are then learning by example. They're learning and internalizing all of this good Christian thinking, learning to think God's thoughts after him, so that they can then go out and be that salt and be the agents of discipling the nations, which your interview with Stephen Perks was so elucidated so well in that in his book, The Decommissioning, The Great Decommissioning. We have to turn it around and go back to the great commissioning of the nations to reflect God's character, to have societies organized around the families and to be decentralized and to be run according to God's law. It's a one-stop shop for, I hope, a lot of homeschool students. But it again, societies are always run by minorities, never majorities. It's always a dedicated minority, as Rushduni said often, who set the tone. The Puritans were never more than 5% in American society, and yet this was a Puritan society for a couple of hundred years. And the future is very bright based on the work of Dr. Rushduni and Cornelius Van Til that he learned so much from.
I want to underline, and this is something which is constantly a surprise to me, and I need reminding of it myself, that to get an education, you don't need a certified teacher, you don't need an institution, you don't need an exam, you don't need any accreditation really from anyone. You don't need a specially crafted piece of paper. The process of education requires that you sit at the feet of better men than yourselves, as it were, and have the faculties available to you in ever increasing quantities that enable you to process that information. And of course, there's more than just information, there's wisdom and so on. But I find myself constantly surprised that I am able to answer questions in the small groups and so on. And I have a perspective that perhaps other folks don't. And it's certainly not because I'm smarter than other people present, but it's because I've spent time listening in the company of a man much better than myself, who pointed to other men, who pointed to God or other men who were so formative of our thinking, the Rousseaus of this world, the Freuds of this world, the great humanistic thinkers, which we need to know about because they are the masters of our world and of our mind, unless we identify them and excise them and exercise them. You don't need the infrastructure. All you need is a smartphone. And increasingly in Africa, the smartphone is abounding all over the world. I don't need to tell anyone. Name the country, Bangladesh, you name it, the cell phone is present. The door is open. Of course, if English is not your native language, you have a steeper hill to climb, but
Well, Google has a very serious effort underway called the 100 by 100. And there you have 100 languages able to be translated into any other 100 languages. You can take almost anything that is in written form, and Google Translator will, an always improving job of translating it. And of course, English is becoming a second language for most of the world. So, really, the one worlders. Evil guys all trying to put everything into a one world order are really doing a lot of our work for us by propagating this technology and propagating the English language. People learn by example, and here you have a way to do that that's outside of any institution, and the cost is zero. There's an opportunity to tithe a little bit of the educational, a Levitical tithe if you want, but it really hasn't cost us very much to publish this material. There you have a great opportunity for people to, even older people, the material's powerful enough that usually we would say formative years are going to be between 6 and 16. And then certainly once you get into your 20s, a lot of your tastes and your values are set. Well, at 45, I had my brain renewed and,
I heard that hogwash too, and I must admit, it smelled like hogwash then. It certainly hasn't rung true in my experience, but again, I feel so inferior when I think of those that have graduated from the Robinson curriculum, knowing my own difficulties in dealing with this, with serious books. There's hope for us.
Even us oldsters who might we might learn to pick up a book and read it even if it's serious. Well, homeschooling is still largely a female phenomenon. It's the moms that are doing it, and that's certainly, most of my customer base with the Robinson curriculum. But we really need the dads to get on board with the higher education, and of course they're very practical. Things have to work. Boys have to earn a living, certainly, and the girls often too. And so we need that piece of paper that's going to result in a job. Well, they're graduating. I think 80% of graduates move back in with mom and dad coming out of college. So the paradigm is kind of broken there, that if we just entrust the children to the state-approved universities and colleges, everything will work out well. Even though it costs them their inheritance, their lifetime earning potential goes way up and so on. That is broken, and it's getting more broken all the time. Why not have God guarantee your children's futures? Where he says, if you will learn and study my law and then internalize it, because it's really just a reflection of his character, if you'll become good reflectors of God's character by internalizing his law word, learning how to manage and organize and relate to everyone in your life according to God's law and do so faithfully, I will bless you. I'm going to guarantee your future. I'm going to put your enemies to be at peace with you. I'm going to bless your coming in and your going out. Everything you put your hand to, I'm going to prosper that. That's the best guarantee for the future you could possibly want. That's the accreditation you really want. Accreditation and credibility really just mean believability. Who are you going to believe? Who are you going to trust? A lot of people that I know of, good, orthodox, solid Christian people, live at the edge of despair all the time. And it ought not to be that way. We ought to have fear of no one but God and trust Him for the future and trust that if we will not close our ears to His law, but open our ears, literally, pick up your smartphone, your computer, and bring up Pocket College and listen, that God will secure your future. You don't have to worry about it at all. He not only knows and numbers all the hairs on your head, he absolutely determines the future. And again, just like a little hobbit is the one who is responsible for bringing down the great evil of the world in The Lord of the Rings. So we can be agents of God to turn things around in ways that we can't even imagine if we will but get with his program instead of the Austrian program, the statist program. If we'll get with his program and learn his law and do things according to his way, everything is going to work out just wonderfully.
I want to Again, underline that. I was chatting earlier to Mike, friend Mike O'Donovan, and one of the things that came up was the fact that you can't evade having to teach God's law. You're not educated. You're not educated if you don't know God's law, and you're not addressing real life if you're not dealing in terms of God's law, and also in terms of earning a livelihood and so on. The law of God is going to address that issue directly, and the covenant certainly does make material promises to you. But colleges are preparing you for a dead and dying world, the world of humanism, which worked for a while, just as someone who eats his own fingers is going to, get some satisfaction out of that for a while.
Humanism, as it turns out, really only survives as a parasite on Christian society, certainly modern humanism. It cannot survive except as a parasite on Christian culture. And the whole world is humanist today, and a parasite is killing the host. There's very little Christian culture to destroy. People have taken for granted so many of the blessings that have come from our previous Christian culture. Even with its flaws, it was a very civilized and civilizing and economically prospering culture and paradigm that we had. And that is quickly being destroyed by this parasite, which only apparently wants to make room for the Islamicization of the West. That world is dying, and it is very much in its last breath. Rushdie has said that it's a truism that it takes about 150 years for the transmission belt of culture to take what philosophers have fully articulated and documented until it's being lived out by the common man in the street. And today we have the common man in the street living out the nightmarish world of Rousseau and Freud and so on, and so and Darwin. And so that world is finished, it's crumbling, it's done, it's utterly bankrupt in every sense of the word. We have to be now trained and prepared to fill the gaps, to build a culture and a world and a society on God's law. And we're given a chance to do that in a more pure and unflawed form than ever before, due to the work of all the Christians that have gone before and as distilled in Dr. Rushdie's work. So the task is before us, and the means are there. We just have to do it. We have to implement it. Men, these Christian men, every day, they don't have to take our word for it. They can sit down and just listen to the first two lectures on Pocket College on their commute, and take that time and redeem that time as they go to work. Turn on your smartphone and pay a little extra for that data plan and listen. And you'll redeem that time that you sit in the car or the train. Give it a try. Listen to the first two lectures of the prerequisite course on God's law, the introduction to the Institutes of Biblical Law by R.J. Rushdie, and evaluate for yourself. Don't take my word for it. Who am I? I'm not certified by anybody. But listen and decide for yourself, is this something that I should spend time doing? And then from there, they can pass it on to their children, and the world will be a very different place.
Very much so. Well, thanks again for agreeing to take the time. And we'll certainly post the links to pocketcollege.com, Christ Rules, and so on. And hope to talk to you again in the future if that works out.
Good to talk to you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you found it edifying. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and YouTube. Remember to think God's thoughts after him by the power of the Holy Spirit. Until next time, every blessing in the Lord.